rather to come back in a detailed manner after you've done so yourself. In other words, what is going to be left as the thorny points for us to deliberate on? Now, we won't know that until you have responded as you have come prepared to do. So I think really on that particular note, Mr. Chupfupa, I think it would be useful if you led us, either you or as whoever you choose, to take us through the presentation. And on that, we will be referring, in fact, to this bill that is before us, am I right, Mr. Hermans? And that is the Special Economic Zones Bill, SEZ 2013/1. Have we all got this particular one right? Okay, over to yourself, DDG.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be going through the presentation. The team that we have, Chair, hasn't changed from the last time, and I think Advocate Van der Merwe has just went through all the different issues that were raised in the bill, being the composition of the board, the roles and functions between the structures, the one-stop shop consultations, and the transitional arrangements. We have consulted with the leadership of the department, specifically the Director General, and we've been mandated to present, you know, ways in which we can address some of the comments and the issues that came up. In relation to the board and the minister's powers, there was concern that the board is not empowered to make decisions, it's advisory, and we gave the feedback that we do think that this is appropriate because we feel that the type of decisions that the impact of the decision that the minister makes when he designates and the decisions that are encompassed in the bill are such an impact that it's important that the minister makes the final decisions and ensure that those decisions are in line with industrial policy. The composition of the board, the issue that came up was regarding the nature of the entities that are represented there, that they are too high level, that it's many government departments, and our feeling at that time was that, you know, that the board has dual roles. One of the roles is regulatory, and the other role is to advise the minister, and we felt like we had achieved an appropriate balance between having people from the private sector and also having people from government. Nonetheless, after consultation with the Director General, especially because it was felt that most of the high-level people in government, like the CEO of the DBSA and DGs of other departments, it might be difficult to convene meetings or senior officials quite frequently. We after consultation with the DG, we felt that maybe we can reduce the number of government or departments and government entities that are represented in the board. And we thought that in terms of what we had in the bill, we had the DBSA and the Department of Finance in the board, and both of those two are really, one is an entity, the DBSA is a entity of the Department of Finance. So we felt that maybe there was duplication, we could maybe consider moving the DBSA. And also, we also had the Department of Economic Development and the IDC in the bill. And we felt that, again, in this particular case, there was duplication because the IDC is part of the Department of Economic Development, and that maybe we could rationalize by reducing two government representatives and increasing the number of independent persons from 3 to 5 in the board. And in terms of seniority of members, Again, there was a concern that the board has a lot of senior members, and I think in terms of the previous of the bill that it stood, we had specified that people must either be DGs or where there are alternates, they should not be below the level of DDGs. We had felt that we had provided flexibility in the sense that we had provided for alternate members. The quorum provision was not quite onerous. It would allow meetings to go on. And we had also made a provision for members to utilize modern technology in terms of having meetings. So we did not think that there would be a problem. There was also a concern in terms of the advisory board as to whether DGs who were appointed for more than two periods. The bill provided that a member could not serve for more than two periods. So there was a concern that what would happen if at all a DG was appointed, his term was renewed for more than two periods. We felt that most of the time it's unlikely that you would have a DG serving for more than 11 years. But however, after consultation in the department, we feel like we can amend Clause 7 to provide that a DG should serve and where appropriate, a DDG must be appointed. So that should do away with the concern that DGs are very busy people and they would be unable to attend board meetings. So we are providing that if a particular department that is envisaged to participate in the board, the DG is occupied, then a DDG in that particular department can be appointed. And we feel like that would also deal with the issue of the senior management handbook that has been raised by Advocate Van der Merwe. I think the issue that has been raised is that DGs, the SMS handbook prevents DGs in certain instances from sitting in boards, and should that, it's something that we are still going to confirm, but should that turn out to be true, then we will provide, and we've already consulted in the department, that DDGs from the affected departments would be appropriate. The reason we are insisting on having senior people again is the fact that we would not want to juniorize the board, because otherwise you could find that departments send very junior people into the board, and it would undermine the ability of this board to do its function. In terms of the board, also there was concerns raised about whether the minister is empowered to remove the board should the board become dysfunctional. Clause 19 of the bill provides for the dissolution of the board, and it enables the minister to remove the entire board after consultation or and on any reasonable grounds. And so we do not think that, we think that Clause 19 is appropriate. It provides for all contingencies, so it's not necessary to amend the bill in that regard. Now an issue where I would want to spend a lot of time is on entities that are envisaged in the bill. This is something that we spent quite a lot of time on last time, and that Advocate Van der Merwe also spent quite a lot of time talking about. We've handed this particular handout so that members should be able to follow and maybe read after the presentation. Just to go, the bill envisages about five entities. One is the advisory board, whose function is to advise the minister on designation and on policy and on strategy. Then we've got a licensee whose function, who would be the applicant to the minister to establish an SEZ. We then have an SEZ entity that would be responsible for implementing developing the SEZ, and the entity would have a board appointed by the licensee, and the entity would operate and would appoint an operator who could be who has to be appointed through a transparent and fair process to execute the functions of developing the SEZ, and then of course we have businesses that are going to be located in the SEZ. The types of approvals that are required is that for the licensee, the license is approved by the minister. The operator would also need a permit needed by the minister. And in the previous presentation, a business locating in the ICZ would also be require approval from the minister. We've done some changes to clarify the roles and functions and the relationships between these different structures. The bill empowers the minister to designate an area as an SEZ. Following consultations with National Treasury and the department, we are going to propose that the minister must make this decision of designation after consultation with the Minister of Finance. I will try and explain later on why this is important, because it's something that we are trying, it's an amendment that we are proposing with the aim of reducing red tape. And I'll explain later on how this will reduce the red tape. In terms of the application for a license, only a government, a particular level of government, a government department, a municipality or a provincial government department, or a PPP acting alone or jointly may apply to the minister to designate an area as an SEZ. The applicant obviously have to meet certain criteria, have a feasibility study, have identified an area, have a plan, and so forth. And if the application is successful, then the minister must, after considering the recommendation of the SEZ Advisory Board, designate the specific area as an SEZ and issue the applicant with a license. So the licensee then would be the PPP or the government department that has applied for an SEZ license. The applicant would then own the license. Then after being awarded this license, then the licensee needs to establish an entity to manage the SEZ. This entity is a separate legal entity from the licensee, and actually this entity might be established in the case of a national government department as a national business enterprise or a provincial business enterprise or a municipal entity. And depending if it's a PPP, obviously it must be a company. It will be a separate legal entity from the licensee. It will be obviously established under the appropriate legislation. If the entity is going to be a national business enterprise, it would have to receive approval from National Treasury. There are regulations that regulate business enterprises, national business enterprises, or if it's a provincial entity, it would have to apply to the provincial treasury, the same with the municipality. Our view is that the licensee will have to comply with the regulations of the PFMA or the Municipal Finance Act where it is appropriate, because the relevant treasuries would only issue the entity would approve an entity only if it complies with the PFMA. So it's not necessary to stipulate that in the bill. It's already implied by the regulations that control national business enterprises. The function of the Special Economic Zone Board, or the board of the entity then, and it is to govern and manage the affairs of the SEZ entity by developing a strategic plan and compiling and submitting the SEZ entity and business plans for the minister for approval. I think we've got two Special Economic Zones board, and sometimes that may create confusion. One is the advisory board, and one is the board of the entity. And it's important to keep that in mind when you are reading the bill. The advisory board is an intergovernmental board that advises the minister. The Special Economic Zone Board would be the board of a particular SEZ entity. So you would have a SEZ board for Kuha and SEZ board for East London and so forth. And their function would be only limited to that particular SEZ. It would obviously be responsible for the governance of the entity. It would be responsible for appointing the operator, and it would be responsible for concluding an agreement with the operator to develop and manage and operate the SEZ entity. In the bill, we have incorrectly said that the licensee appoints the operator. It is in fact the Special Economic Zone Board that will appoint the operator. And in appointing the operator, then the board must follow a fair and equitable, transparent, and competitive process. And the operator will only be able to begin developing the ICZ as he has been as soon as they have a permit from the minister. So far I've spoken about three entities. There's the advisory board that advises the minister, and then the applicant becomes the licensee. The applicant then establishes an entity with the board, and the board appoints the operator then to develop the SEZ. And this is the operator could obviously be an entity from the private sector. It could be any particular entity that has the capabilities of doing this function. The bill does not preclude the SEZ entity, that is the entity that is established by the licensee, from also developing and managing and operating its own SEZ. At the current moment, with the Kuha IDZ and the East London IDZ, I think what we have is that the SEZ entities that have been established are also operating and managing their own IDZ. The bill does not preclude this from happening in the future, but in the cases where that happens, the entity that is managing the IDZ would still have to obtain an operator permit from the minister in terms of clause 31. However, we are going to propose that the bill be amended to provide that in the case that an SEZ entity is established by a PPP licensee, the licensee can manage and operate its own SEZ, provided that it obtains an operator permit in terms of clause 31. And the reason we would like to make a special arrangements from the PPP, that the PPP process in itself is an open process, it's a transparent process, it's regulated by Treasury. So we feel that we do not necessarily need to go through these processes twice. It's only in the case where we've got a government department where, in terms of appointing an operator, we would want to have a transparent and competitive appointment process of the operator. So the functions of the operator is that they must conclude an agreement with the board before applying for a permit, and the minister must be satisfied before granting the operator permit that the agreement provides for duties and terms and conditions for the development and operations of the SEZ. And in terms of the SEZ board, and this is where I would like to go back to the earlier recommendations on where we said that the minister must consult with the Minister of Finance before designating an SEZ. there was quite a lot of concern about red tape, that before each and every company locates in an SEZ, it would have to obtain permission from the minister has to sign off. After consultation in the department and with Treasury, we felt like the way we could cut down on red tape is that at the time that the minister approves the designates the SEZ, minister must also approve at that time the type of businesses that can be located in the SEZ, and also approve at the time the types of incentives then that can be received by those businesses. So if that decision is made once by the minister, provided the criteria is then clear, then there would be no need for the minister to approve for each and every business that wants to locate in, to approve, sign off on each and every business that wants to locate in an SEZ. That decision then can be delegated to an SEZ operator and the Special Economic Zone Board. And the reason we need to consult with Treasury, Treasury is responsible for the Companies Act, and they have indicated a strong desire that in terms of granting incentives, they do not want to have a line-by-line approval authority, but they would want to at least be consulted on the type of incentives that are going to be granted to the type of companies that are going to be granted incentives. So to cut on the red tape, this would only be done once by the minister. We specify the criteria, and then it would be left up to the...
CDG Chapupa, just to ensure we didn't misunderstand, I was under the impression, but of course it could be that the name has been a problem. I thought the Companies Act per se fell under the DTI, unless, of course, something has changed.
I'm sorry, I wanted to say the Income Tax Act. The incentives are granted in terms of the Income Tax Act, and since the Income Tax Act is falls under the Department of Finance, they would want to also be involved in the decision of granting incentives to their function. It's a money bill, and yeah. Thanks, John. Hence, we would want to then amend Clause 37 so that a business seeking to locate in the SEZ can apply to the Special Economic Zone Board as opposed to the minister. Obviously, the board, when approving that a company must locate, would have to look at the criteria that has been approved and prescribed by the minister. And the consultation here, like I've already indicated, it will be a once-off consultation with the Minister of Finance. Each time the minister designates an SEZ, he would agree with the Minister of Finance on the types of incentives that would be accorded to companies locating in that particular SEZ. In terms of the different structures, there was confusion in Clause 11, 25, 26, 27, the clause listed here, where the word licensee was used instead of the Special Economic Zone Board, and we think that was what was creating most of the confusion regarding the structure. So we would propose that the word licensee be changed with or amended, and the word be replaced with the Special Economic Zone Board. in terms of the one-stop shop, there's been concerns raised that the bill does not detail the one-stop shop model that will apply to stream approval processes. There are certain clauses that stipulate for the establishment of a one-stop shop, and the objective of the one-stop shop would be really to facilitate, cut down on red tape, and make sure that companies that are locating in the SEZ receive the required government services speedily. We have provided the committee with a document that shows the research that the department has done on one-stop shop. There's no particular formula that is followed in internationally in terms of a one-stop shop. Each and every country tries and adapt and really tries to improvise on doing this. And the particular problem that countries are trying to overcome is that you normally have different government departments having different mandates. You have the Immigration Act being controlled by Home Affairs. You've got customs by the Department of Finance. And it's not possible to transfer all those decision making to one entity. So countries try to innovate in terms of how they can provide for speedy decision making, and we think that the bill needs to provide for flexibility for the department and for the SEZ board to continuously innovate around this issue. We do not think that by being prescriptive about detailing, you know, exactly how the one-stop shop would work, would meet that objective. But other than that, to try and accommodate concerns that were raised in the public hearings, we are going to propose that to strengthen the provisions in the bill, that we use the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act of 2005. And this act provides for the minister to enter, ministers of different departments to enter into implementation protocols. The idea behind the act was to actually try and encourage intergovernmental cooperation. So what we are thinking is that we should include in the bill something requiring the minister to enter into implementation protocols with the affected departments, that would be Environmental Affairs, Home Affairs, the Department of Labor, municipalities, and SARS, regarding the establishment of these one-stop shops. We think that this will how by including this particular provision in the act, it will empower the minister in terms of working with those departments and to strengthen this aspect of the bill also, and to make sure that there is we incentivize the SEZ to work on the one-stop shop. We would require them to report annually to the minister on how the one-stop shops are working, what has been achieved in terms of cutting on red tape, and then the minister would table a report in Parliament annually on how the implementation protocols are working. There was also an issue that was raised regarding consultation, whether the bill provides sufficiently for the minister to consult regarding designation of an area, taking over the administration of an SEZ, or suspending or withdrawing designation in terms of clause 29. We do agree that in designating an SEZ, it would be advisable for minister to consult. Our view is that the way the bill is currently, it does not prohibit the minister from consulting, But we could strengthen the bill by specifically providing that the minister must consult prior to designating. And in terms of taking over the administration of an SEZ, Clause 28 empowers the minister to appoint an administrator to take over the functions of a special economic zones board. So this would be in the case where the entity established by the licensee, that is an entity established by the municipality or an entity established by the PPP, is not functional. Then what you are saying is that the minister can take over the functions of that entity. So if the minister takes over the functions of that entity, it would mean that the minister would then become, the administrator would become the principal of the operator. We think that the minister may appoint without consulting if there is financial mismanagement and delay caused by the consultation would be detrimental to the function of the SEZ. It was proposed that the minister must be that the clause must be amended to oblige the minister to consult with the licensee, the board, and the operator. We think that the minister can consult with the board and can consult with the advisory board. Remember again, there's a distinction between the advisory board. In this particular case, the minister would be taking the function of the SEZ board. So minister, we are saying that it would be appropriate for minister to consult with this with both the advisory board and also with the special economic zone board. But we do not think that it would be necessary for the minister to consult with the operator and the individual businesses because they would not be affected by the decision of the minister to take over the function or of the board. None of the privileges that they enjoy under the Act would be affected. Also, the contract of the operator with the SEZ board would not be affected. So we do not think that the minister would necessarily require to consult with those two. We think that consultation with both the board and with the advisory board would be sufficient. In terms of suspending and withdrawing designation, Clause 29 enables the minister to suspend or withdraw designation of an SEZ which does not further government industrial development objectives. Minister can make that decision after considering the recommendations of the advisory board. Clause 29.3 says that the lawful activities of the businesses located in an SEZ will not be affected by the suspension or withdrawal of the designation if the business has been situated in the SEZ legally. Because the decision to withdraw the designation will affect the companies located as opposed to the decision to take over administration. If the minister completely withdraws designation, this will then affect the businesses located in the SEZ. They will be affected and the operator will be affected. We think that it would be appropriate that we can make the amendment that the minister should be required to consult with the businesses located in the SEZ and also with the SEZ operator before withdrawing the designation. Then, in terms of the transitional arrangements, there was concerns raised that the bill does not sufficiently address the impact of the new SEZ legislation on existing IDZs. We do agree that we have provided for transitional arrangements, But we think that an amendment would be good to clarify what happens to the current IDZs, what happens to the current operators that are operating the IDZs. And we think that there could be an amendment to provide that the permits that are already have been issued in terms of the IDZ regulations and which are in force at the commencement of the act should remain in force and must be regarded as an SEZ operator permit. We also agree that the businesses that are located in the IDZ should be regarded as businesses located in terms of Clause 37, so the businesses should not be affected. But however, where there is a business that is located in the SEZ, it would not automatically qualify for SEZ incentives because within the current SEZ or IDZ, we do have businesses that would not necessarily qualify for incentives under the SEZ incentives that are foreseen. Chair, I think I've tried to go into detail, but we can clarify where it is possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG. We do appreciate that, Mr. Chipfupa. I should have just noted that the Chief Director, Infrastructure Investment Support Unit, Mr. Kaya Nkaka, is here, as well as Mr. Dumasani Sumbinga, Legal Services Director, Ms. Janice Jonathan, Director SEZ Stakeholder Management, and Mr. Jabulani Satoli, Deputy Director SEZ Monitoring and Evaluation. And of course we also have the legal representative from DTI Advocate Stratum. Thank you. Members, we've heard from Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe already, who may even step out as we are continuing with proceedings, because I think I've already pointed out to members she has to also brief the presiding officers on certain issues as well. But it now is over to yourselves for clarification on that. So I recognize Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Kwabasa, Honourable van der Merwe.
Can I go for it, Chair? Okay, thanks a lot. Thank you very much, DDG. It was a useful presentation. Just a couple of initial comments and then I'll get on to more substantial comments. Firstly, in reading the bill, it really, I know you mentioned this, but it really is quite confusing when the word board is used interchangeably all the time for two different kinds of boards. I think it would be really helpful. I mean, if it's confusing us, and I've read the bill several times, then it's going to be very confusing for members of the public. So it would be really helpful if we can just refer to advisory board when we mean the advisory board and board when we refer to the entity board. That's just a kind of stylistic comment. Then, slightly more substantial, this page 11 of your memo is quite illuminating, and it sets up really what I must say is a overwhelming application process that I think is just going to take, if not months, then quite possibly years to get through for a single SEZ to become operational. I've just highlighted there's seven distinct steps that I can see just between application and an operator being appointed. Each of those, or at least one, two, three, four, five of those steps rely on a decision having to be taken by either the Minister of Trade and Industry or the Minister of the Treasury or both. I foresee enormous delays and backlogs when it comes to, you know, relying on ministers to personally take these decisions, back and forth between the various entities five or six times. I really do strongly believe that we've got to find a way to simplify this application process somehow to make it less unwieldy, or more wieldy would be the little fuzzy on why we need to have separate entities for the licensee and for the entity itself, for the SEZ, and for the operator. And you've clarified that slightly by saying that the operator and the entity can be the same person, possibly. But why can't the licensee and the entity be the same person? I just don't understand why we need to have a separate entity for that, that adds just more layers of bureaucracy and slows down the process even more. And really, the minister's got enormous power and discretion in this whole process. And, you know, I'm not in principle always opposed to the minister being able to do things, but it does mean that it slows down things a lot. You know, if you look at the power that provincial ministers of planning have, for example, in approving development plans, the reason we've got 3 or 4 year delays in development plans, there's no way you can get a development approved in South Africa anywhere in less than 3 years. It's because the minister is the only person who can make those decisions. And so it's quite understandable that his desk piles up to the ceiling with all these applications, and it really slows down the process. So I'm worried about the extent that the minister is personally involved in this whole process from beginning to end. Then, DDG, my very fundamental concern is about the role of provincial governments. Now, provincial governments have got a constitutional co-responsibility in terms of trade. It's a Schedule 4 concurrent power. That power is not given to local governments and state-owned enterprises, which is why I'm not raising it in relation to them. But it does concern me that provincial governments have to go to the minister just like any other municipality or state-owned enterprise and apply to have an SEZ in their province. And it's basically up to the minister. I'm not sure that that's respecting what the Constitution means by concurrent power. I really think we've got to beef up the section, and the minister it must be very difficult for a minister to say no to a provincial government that applies for an SEZ license. I understand practically why you can't just let anyone make their own SEZ. That would be a free-for-all. But when the Constitution gives provincial governments power to legislate and manage over trade issues, we must respect that and make sure it's reflected in the legislation. And at this point, the way I read it, provincial governments are treated exactly the same as any municipality or state-owned enterprise. I think that's wrong. Also, I really do believe that... let me just qualify that. I know that people often say, you may think that I'm just trying to defend the territory of the DA in the Western Cape, and say it's not about provincial territorialism at all. I just really do believe that if the local MEC for finance or economic development in Gauteng or KZN or wherever sees an opportunity and believes that their provincial government wants to designate an SEZ, they should be allowed to do so in terms of the Constitution, in terms of Schedule 4. So that's that. Then on incentives, it's a related concern. This bill seems to provide only for national incentives, but I don't see any good reason why, if a municipality applies for an SEZ, why that municipality can't offer its own suite of incentives, or a provincial government, or whoever applies. Why can't applicants provide their own suite of incentives where they have something to offer? So, for example, we've heard in this committee how municipalities often charge exorbitant electricity surcharges. It should be within the scope of this bill for a municipal applicant to say, we, on top of what National Treasury is prepared to offer in terms of tax incentives, we are also prepared to offer discount electricity charges or free rates on that property, or whatever the case is. They should be able to offer their own suite of incentives if they have something to offer, and I think the bill should make provision for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable Kwabasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 4, slide 7, I just want a little bit of clarity on where it says that if a designated member is unable to attend a board meeting, he may appoint an alternate. Is there a provision for that alternate to be fully mandated to take decisions on behalf of the standing member? And secondly, are we looking at having a standing alternate so that you don't have different alternates all the time who may not be au fait with the issues that need to be decided upon? Secondly, Chairperson, the application process. It's not clear just how, what time frames are provided from the beginning of the application through the process up to the granting of the license. I'm worried about the too many players in between there, and without time frames being provided, it may take quite long for a license to be granted. Lastly, Chairperson, on page 16, suspension and withdrawal of the designation. I understand that to mean once a decision is taken to suspend or withdraw the designation, as it says there, lawful business activities will continue. But then, does it mean the incentives are withdrawn and any other special arrangements are withdrawn, but the business may continue as an open, free competition kind of business, no longer, you know, kind of protected by the special nature of the SEZ? Is that what it means? And can the suspension or withdrawal, upon correction of whatever the causes might have been, be reinstated? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kubasa, Honourable van der Merwe. Thank you, Chair. And may I apologise for coming late. I find that with only the use of one arm, it takes me that much longer to do everything. And I might have missed this, but what is the status of this memorandum on SEZ bill following the public consultations? Because I find when I read that along with the slides, I became more and more confused. And I don't, for example, even understand why the SEZ entity is a separate legal entity from the licensee. Is that what you asked? And the operator permit is a confusing thing as well, because it says here the bill does not preclude an entity from also developing and managing its own SEZ, provided that it obtains an operator permit. What would be the circumstances? Maybe I missed something in the beginning. I do apologize if I did. But I find myself extremely confused. To try and understand better, I wonder if it would be possible to go back to the slides that we didn't get a copy of but were presented by Advocate van der Merwe, which showed an organogram of how things work, and to put into that slide the improvements and the changes that have been made so that we can see how it works more in a round sort of way. If you recall, when we were in V119, there was a slide that showed those things. If we could just see how the changes are improving that organogram, I think that might be helpful. I might well not understand this because I haven't read it thoroughly, but I would like to see it in a visual form. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable van der Merwe. I just have some of the same questions, but I think that it does need to be the clarification with respect to the memorandum, which is intended to be a very helpful a document per se, but if it is going to create confusion because of expressing things differently from the slide, it then doesn't add to clarity at all. And it may be useful for that to be reviewed by DTI alongside the slides we have just received this morning. The other issue is, well, there were just a couple I had, which, let's see, one of it was on the alternates. And one of the interesting thing about alternates we've seen when there's been a failure in good governance, which the Auditor General has referred to across, of course, the different departments, as it were, has been when an alternate functions, you know, is appointed, but in fact it's only ever the alternate you see on the board and never the actual permanent member that was appointed, and which can happen, you see. And then you begin to wonder just what the efficacy was of the actual clause and the deployment thereof. But I'm looking at the contract. You mentioned here, is it slide 29? Yeah, it's taking over the administration of an SEZ. Minister may appoint an administrator, etc. And at one point, DEG, you indicated, well, look, this is not really going to affect the contract of the SEZ board. But by the sound of what you were saying, it very much did affect the contractual status of that. Because I'm thinking, if the board was to change, where is the contract thereof? Do you see? I mean, yeah, and you enter into a contract with a specific entity, per se, a board. And then the suspension or withdrawal of the designation, again, you know, you have got a contractual issue here. And as we know, in South Africa, the contractual issues are very, very stringent there. And, you know, whether we like it or not, they have to be observed, as it were. Under the transitional arrangements, what, you know, I think we need a greater clarity there. Although it does appear to be covered in the last point here about the IDZs. However, such a business will not automatically qualify for the SEZ incentives. But that refers to the incentive, per se, from national. Doesn't refer to any other incentives, all right? Now, the IDZ, if you look at the purpose of an IDZ and the purpose of an SEZ, there is a difference. There's got to have been a difference, otherwise you wouldn't have had an SEZ. Now, given that that is the case, it appears that it would simply be conflated into it, as it were, with the exception of the incentives. That would appear to be the only exception. And I just really need a clarity thereof with that kind of automatic conflation. Thank you very much. But yes, we do appreciate this. I think this is a very, very complex piece of legislation, and I'm glad that we've all quite alert to it, and that there are other countries that are either doing extremely well, like Japan in it, and others that are not doing so well in the utilization thereof. So over to yourself, DTI.
Thanks, Chair. You did recognize that I have a very big team that accompanied me today, and so hopefully they'll be able to help provide clarity on all the difficult issues that have been raised. Honorable Hill raised some issue. A number of issues. I do take that, Chair. We could find some wording that makes it easy for, especially regarding the advisory board and the SEZ board, that makes it easy for people to follow the bill. But on the more substantive issues, in terms of designation, our view was actually that we simplified things tremendously. That there are only two decisions that minister takes with regard to designating an SEZ. There's the decision to designate itself, which he does after consulting the Minister of Finance. And then also he takes the decision whether to award an operator permit. If you look at the previous reincarnation of what you originally brought here, the minister was also going to make a decision each and every time a company wanted to locate. That has been done away with. So there are only really two decisions that the minister takes. The other appointment is the appointment of the operator. That is the function that is done by the entity that manages the SEZ board. Now I think the question that has been raised by has been why do we need somebody who holds the license, and then why, in addition to that, you need an SEZ entity, and in addition to that, you need an operator. Now, the way we see this working in practice is that your applicant would be a government department. It could be, for instance, the Department of Science and Technology in national government wanting to establish an SEZ around Science and Technology Park. In order to Now, managing SEZ and so forth, it's not the normal function of government departments. You would require a particular entity that would manage outside of the department, most probably, that would oversee that development. And in addition to that, you would that entity we see as a SEZ board that would be appointed by the minister to say, and with a secretariat to say, go and develop the SEZ. Now, in order to develop the SEZ itself, you would require a company that is skilled in construction, that is skilled in recruiting. You would require something like a property management company that would also do investment promotion and so forth. Now, that would be your operator that is appointed by this government entity that is appointed by the SEZ entity. It could be a private sector entity. It would have the required management expertise. That kind of expertise does not necessarily, most of the time, reside in government departments or reside in government entities. So that for us that's why you need an operator, and you also for the department to make sure that it manages its particular SEZ properly, it needs to have a board that oversees that particular SEZ. Overall, if it's a municipality, the municipality would still be the municipality would be the license holder in the case of a municipality. But also, again, managing SEZ is not the normal function of the municipality. So the municipality would establish an entity outside of the municipality to hold the license and to make sure that it oversees the development of the SEZ, and it would then contract in a private sector player who would do the development and the investment promotion and so forth. In terms of the powers that are granted to the minister in relation to the provincial government. In fact, it's not only to I guess we recognize that there has to be some decision maker in government. And the bill does not say it's not only provincial government that can apply to the minister. It's also other national government departments that, can apply. There's a requirement also for cooperation, intergovernmental cooperation at national government level. And we don't think that it's really taking away from the independence of the province or the way that the constitution gives on provincial governance, because it puts the province, the national government department and municipality in relation only to applying for an SEZ permit all at the same level. It doesn't actually discriminate against the province. Obviously, for the minister to agree not to issue a permit to another government department or an SEZ license to another government department or to a municipality or to a province, he would take into consideration quite a lot of things, and one of them being the fact that the constitution enjoins all government levels of government to cooperate and work together. In terms of the incentives, we have only in this bill provided for the minister working with other government ministers to establish incentives. I've gone through the fact that, you know, in terms of establishing incentives, it's in fact most of the time it might not necessarily be in the competence of our department, the type of incentive. So hence we would have to work with the Department of Finance in establishing incentives. In the same vein, it would be extremely difficult for us. Municipal government is an independent sphere of government, so we cannot provide for an enabling legislation for municipal government to create incentives in this particular bill. But it's also instructive to know that there is nothing in the bill that stops any municipality from establishing incentives. Maybe there might be need for an amendment that takes into cognizance that acknowledges that municipalities can, where appropriate, establish incentives. But what would regulate the establishment of those incentives would not really be the SEZ bill. It would be the Municipal Act and the Municipal Finance Act and appropriate legislation governing municipalities. There are issues that have been raised by Honorable Kwabasa around alternates, whether we are going to have standing alternates, and I think that's the issue that the chair also raised. I think the intention in the bill is that we would have standing alternates who would be mandated alternates. It may be that the wording in the bill is not clear. I'm not sure. But the idea has always been that we are going to have standing alternates. Hence, we actually mentioned that if there is an alternate, we've also specified the level that the alternate must be, because we are also concerned with the issues that have been raised, especially by the chair, that we would not want to see a boss that has been appointed and being juniorized by and becoming dysfunctional, because you just have any person coming if the member is not able to come. Time frame in terms of designation. Well, I mean the whole idea behind special economic zones is know, to speed up the process of establishing businesses, of locating investors, of cutting down with red tape. And hence we have made this amendment that companies are proposing changing the bill, that companies that are going to locate in SEZ would have a speedy approval process, so that it would not be something that happens at ministerial level. It would not even involve the advisory board. It would be something that is done by the entity board. We've not specified in the legislation the time frame within which the minister has to make his decision to designate after receiving an application. What we have previously done, and maybe what one useful thing that we should consider here, is especially around the process of consultation, that we could provide for specific time frames for consultation. I think the current ICZ bill or regulations provide for a period of 30 days to consult if the minister is going to be going out for consultation. I'm not sure whether it's possible to say that minister has to respond to each application in so many days, but it's something that maybe in further discussion can be considered. Suspension or withdrawal of designation. The easier part is that, yes, I think the bills provide that if designation has been suspended, it can at a later date be reinstated if the situation is rectified. Obviously, suspension is one of the most drastic steps that we foresee in the bill, and it's made such that the suspension or withdrawal of designation, before a minister suspends or withdraws designation, he has to consult quite thoroughly, has to consult with the businesses, has to consult with the SEZ operator, has to consult with the licensee, and so there's an issue then of the incentives that have been granted and the privileges that have been granted to the different entities. Would they be still available if the SEZ if the SEZ status is removed? I think, and it's an important point, because companies who are going to be taking a long-term investment decision on the basis of the fact that they've got an incentive would want to know, under all conditions, what would happen to this. And our view is that the incentive, the legislation that provides for the incentive, provide what would happen in all other instances, under all contingencies, what would happen. So it's because it's an issue of incentives, it's not addressed in this bill, but we do think that in all instances, companies should be clear to know that under each contingency, what would happen to the privileges that we have been granted. And I think that would be made clear in the legislation affecting the incentives. Then there was an issue raised by Honourable Van der Merwe to request us to provide the in visual form. We have tried to provide this one particular diagram that talks to each the role and functions of each entity. We could maybe look at maybe doing it in diagrammatic form if we clarify it better. But I do understand that, especially when taking into consideration also with the advisory board and the SEZ board, that it's not an easy piece of legislation. And in terms of the memorandum, our view, and unless something is pointed out, is that it talks to the slide, and there is really no. It was intended actually to assist members when going through the slides on their own. So we would not be aware of any contradiction between what is said in the memorandum and what is said in the slides. The chair has raised an issue about alternate that we think we've addressed. Then there was an issue about the administrator and the contract that the chair raised of the board. The board function is the board would have a contract with the SEZ operator. It would also have a contract, I guess, with the entities via the operator that are located in there. So our view is that when the minister appoints an administrator to take over the functions of the board, the minister would have to honor the contractual obligations of the board to the operator and also to the entities that are located there. So that's what I was trying to so the minister, the administrator would in this case become the board, and whatever the obligations that the board had to those entities would then become, you know, the administrator's obligations. Then the chair spoke about ID, especially in terms of transitional provisions, the transitional provisions seems to speak only to incentives, and they do not speak to the substantive differences that exist between what an IDZ is and what an SEZ is, and how are the IDZ going to be affected by the fact that I think actually. Maybe the way we've covered it in the slides, we've not done justice to what the bill says. In the bill, what we've said is that what should happen is that an IDZ that has been issued, that has been designated, would continue to be considered as an SEZ under the bill, and an operator permit would also be considered to be an operator permit that has been issued under this bill. But what the legislation then says is that it takes into account that the IDZ Act has got different obligations and different requirements than the SEZ Act. It actually provides a transitional period, and during this transitional period then, it says that now that we will treat you as if you as an IDZ, we will treat you as if you are an SEZ, but we will give you then a period of 5 years, or there's a mandatory period, I think, that is specified in the bill, during which period then you have to make sure that you bring everything about yourself into line with the requirements of the SEZ. So you will be treated as if at all you have been designated under the SEZ Act, but then you are given time to get yourself up to the level of the SEZ. And in terms of the companies, I think that would be a similar thing that would operate, but companies that are in there would not necessarily enjoy incentives. Yeah. And I think maybe where there are issues that I've left out, maybe my colleagues could add on to them. Just
thank you, Chair. Just a few points that I would like to add on, which have already been covered by the DDG. The issue about time frames. If you put in the legislation a time frame, because an issue of a time frame also can change based on the operational needs of that particular program. And sometimes it will be very difficult to change it if it's in the law. You have to go through the amendment process. So hence, we normally put time frames in the regulations and guidelines, because there's a level of flexibility. But then the legislation provides that framework to say there's this enabling environment to proceed. In other words, there's a space for you to designate. And then the regulations go further to say how and what will be the time frame, so that you also guide the applicants in terms of expectations and also in terms of the criteria to follow. And another thing, I think the DDG has also alluded to the fact that the bill, in terms of the incentives provision by national, it seems as if the bill has catered for the national, particularly the GTI. Yeah, I think we consider this even when we're doing the policy, the what called the policy development of this bill, where we looked at what municipalities, provinces, and other entities of government can provide. But we came to a point that it will be really difficult for us to legislate other independent tiers of government, like municipalities and provinces, on what they can do. But the understanding is that the bill doesn't actually prohibit them from providing incentives. In fact, during consultations as well, it has been an understanding at all levels that each municipality or the province will do as much to add to a suite of incentives, so that they make their own SEZ to be more attractive to the investors. And then the issue of the role of the province. Again, I think the DDG has explained it quite well in terms of the build-up towards the issuing of the license. Well, that is a more involving process, where if the applicant is a province, the application process itself, taking from feasibility studies going forward, is done jointly with the province. I'll make an example, for instance, of the Saldanha Bay IDZ, where from the pre-feasibility stage, the process has been done between the DTI and the province jointly. And secondly, we see this as a mandate for industrialization, and that mandate for industrial development is the mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry. And the minister then is an authority that is given that mandate to ensure that industrialization across the country is done. But I don't think the issue of what I call the province, because there are various instruments. We are talking about identifying an SEZ as an instrument of industrial development in the country. So I think that is our viewpoint as the DTI in terms of our proposal here. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Thank you, Chief Director. It's Mr. Ngaka. Just for we're going to get this on Hensart, so they won't know who's spoken. At least we let them know. All right. Do you wish to add anything, DDG?
Chair, my colleague, Mr. Sombinga, our legal advisor, wanted to add something.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add one point here, the concern that was raised by Honorable Chawaza, one of them was the position of the activities that are done on the ICZ that what will happen during the suspension or withdrawal. That one is covered in terms of clause 29, which says that the lawful activity will not be affected during that time. And again, your concern of the contractual position or on the business, your chairperson, it is also covered there. Hence, we are proposing that the section must be amended for the minister to consult first before the suspension or withdrawal is made. Thank you.
No, thank you very much on that one. Going back to members again, Honourable Hill Lewis. I don't see any other hands at this particular point. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you for the replies. I really want to support what Honourable Khubaza said about time frames. I think this is critical. You know, I really try to look at legislation practically and see what someone's going to have to go through to try and comply with this legislation. And that's why, you know, I used my highlighter to just check what all the processes were. Now, and I just want to run you through that because I think it's quite a useful exercise. An applicant submits an application to the minister. The minister takes his time and applies his mind and designates an SEC licensee. Then they create the entity, and in the case of a provincial government or municipality, they must comply. They need to apply to the provincial treasury or to the municipal treasury or indeed to the national treasury if it's a national government department. That takes another several months at least. Then they have to get an operator license issued. Then they must appoint a board. The operator license is done, is issued by the minister or approved by the minister. That takes more time. Then to approve businesses, now they're operating, they open their front doors. This is at least several years later. Then to get businesses to move into the SEZ, they've then got to go back to the board and apply to the advisory board, the national board that is, to allow businesses to locate in the SEZ. Again, the Minister of Finance must be consulted on what kind of industries. The Minister of Finance is a very busy person, and so there again there's delays and delays. The point I'm trying to make is that I really do agree with the point made by Honourable Khubaza that we've got to stipulate timelines for this process. Otherwise, I promise you, all of these people are such busy people, it will take years before a single SEZ is off the ground. That's the one point. Then, clause 21 of the bill on incentives. I hear what you're saying, that it doesn't specifically preclude municipalities from, say, offering discounted electricity. But because of the way that clause 21 is worded, it does kind of give the impression that only the minister can design an incentive program, and that really everyone else should stay out of it. So I'd be very happy if we just put in a clause 3 there that says simply this doesn't preclude the operators or the entity or whomever is the right person from designing their own incentive programs in line with the relevant legislation that governs them. If we had a line like that, I'd be very happy, because then it would be a clear message to municipalities around the country that national government's going to come to the table with an incentive program, but you are also expected to come to the table. Don't just apply for an SEZ and think that national government's going to provide all the incentives. That you can, it's legal and indeed quite possibly necessary for you to do so. Then, on the issue of the role of provincial, and thank you, that's a very good point that you make, that it also includes national governments that can also apply. I hadn't thought of that. But I still do think that the bill treats national government departments, provincial governments, the same as it does SOEs and municipalities. And that's not how the Constitution treats national government departments and provincial governments. They do have a kind of special place in terms of determining trade policy, and I think that special place needs to be reflected a little bit better in the bill. And I don't know how, I'm not suggesting that I have the answer, but you know, there needs to be a kind of special hurdle that the minister should have to jump over if he wants to say no to a national government department or to a provincial government, that he doesn't need to jump over if he wants to say no to a municipality or a state-owned enterprise. I do think there's a difference, and those two applicants need to be treated differently. Somehow, we can talk about how best to do that, because I completely take the point that you can't just have everyone designating their own SEZ. There's got to be a national decision maker. I agree with that. But we need to find a way to somehow differentiate between national government departments and provincial governments as one group of applicants and everyone else as another group of applicants.
Thank you very much, Hill Lewis. There does seem to be a couple of other hands. I know just Honourable Kwabasa had his hand up. Yes, and also Honourable Albert.
Chair, just on the issue of the expeditious manner in which all of these applications should be done, I want to refer to Section 11 of the Bill on page 7. Yes. I want to read into 11.1CDE. In terms of the functions of the board, to mean that before, once the application is lodged, the board will look into the application and probably even do an in-loco inspection to see whether the application for a designation of an area to be a special economic zone does indeed fit the requirements, so that once the advisory board advises the minister to approve and all processes then follow, it is because everything else has been considered in a speedy manner so that it doesn't delay the application. So I'm saying, Chairperson, if do those three, 11.1CDE, perhaps begin to speak to how fast this can be done, and therefore you are then able to put into regulations, as you have alluded to, kind of time frame. I just want the clarity. Is one reading that correctly? To say one of the functions of the key functions of the board is to ensure that everything else is taken care of, so that the minister and whoever else is involved in decision making can take speedy decisions as advised by the board.
Thank you very much. Honourable Alberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies for being late. I might be asking questions that have been posed before. Firstly, I would like to know why only government departments and public-private partnerships can apply. Why not civil society itself, business chambers and so forth, that might have unique plans? I understand that they perhaps need to, after that, venture into a public-private relationship of some sort, but why can't they apply on their own volition? Why must they get government consent at first? As I understand this bill, it is designed to expedite economic growth in South Africa, and we must try and use this bill, as far as I'm concerned, to experiment a little bit as well, to see where growth areas can form, where we have tax incentives and where we make changes to existing laws to see whether they will work or not. Furthermore, on Section 6, the Special Economic Zone strategy that the Minister will draft, I would like to understand whether the Minister will bring that strategy to Parliament for our input as well, or whether this will be a one-sided process. As far as the Special Economic Zones Advisory Board is concerned, it will consist of 15 persons. I was just wondering why the Department of Labour doesn't have a representative there. Obviously, the Department of Labour and the Minister of Labour must have some sort of input in terms of the labour regime that's to be used within that zone. As for the appointment of the members of that board, why is the parliamentary committee not to be consulted, as with, for instance, the appointment of the head of the Consumer Commission? What is the difference in that? Why can the minister just appoint people without consulting us? And Madam Chair, I think that's it for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to delay the point I wish to make. I'll wait for the Honourable the Mervyn to return, because it also pertains to one of the points he raised. So if DTI can respond to those questions and comments, please. DDG, Mr. Chimfupa.
Thank you, Chair. Starting with the comment by Honourable Hill Lewis, I think maybe there might be some misunderstanding. The original text of the bill, as it read, was that the minister would approve each and every company that wants to locate in an SEZ. And for the minister to make that approval, obviously, there would be a recommendation by the advisory board. Now, the amendment that you are proposing is that at the time of designation, minister must provide a criteria to the licensee and the entity board of the types of companies that can locate inside an SEZ. So once the minister has designated, there will be no day-to-day decisions by the minister saying this company can. So that cuts down tremendously and eases on the operation of the SEZ. So there are only two decisions for the minister that he really minister takes the decision on whether he designates, and he takes this in consultation with the Minister of Finance, and obviously at that time also issues the criteria. And then the next decision by the minister is in issuing an operator license. And that is the decision taken by the minister on his own. Now there are certain processes that need to be undertaken in terms of establishing an entity and so forth. I think that in practice, one could and maybe the way we set it out in diagrams have this advantage of making things easy, but sometimes they can also be misleading. In the sense that we set it out sequentially, in terms of creating a provincial entity or creating a municipal entity, it does not have to be a process that follows sequential. One could do those processes. Some of them could be done in parallel, especially since there are different approval, approval authorities. So one is a provincial treasury that needs to approve, and one could submit simultaneously, and once the minister approves, then the provincial treasury also approves the establishment of the entity. In practice, there are quite a number of things that can be done to short circuit and make sure that one does things quite quickly. My reading of the bill, my understanding is that there are three entities that can apply. Provincial, local, provincial, local, and national, or either separately or maybe a PPP in terms of treasury regulation. So a PPP would, my understanding would be either the private sector with the provincial government, the private sector with the municipal government, or the private sector with the national government. In all cases, government would be involved. If we made special provisions for national and provincial government, the discrimination would only be against municipal government, against nobody else. I don't know. Maybe we could look at the constitutionality of it, because there are all three of them are different spheres of government. And then Honorable Gwabaza has said, I think I agree with his interpretation. The idea behind the advisory board is that really the advisory board is going to do all of the work of ensuring that all the provisions of the Act have been complied with, the plans are reasonable, they're financed, and then recommend to the minister as having done their due diligence. So it's not like when it reaches the minister's desk, it will be then when the work starts. So in that way, there will be a speeding up of the process. And then the comment from Honorable Alves, if I'm correct, it's around government departments and civil society, or why is it only government departments that can apply? Why can civil society and businesses not apply to FNSZ? Our understanding of the special economic zone is that it's not something that can be done by the private sector on its own. Government facilitation role is critical here. Facilitation role in terms of providing infrastructure, in terms of providing incentives. The idea is to bring civil society or the private sector as much as possible, and make sure that one promotes that working together, brings all the necessary strengths of the private sector, and brings in the facilitative role of government. You can't do it without an act. You can't do it without the active participation of the municipality of national government. It would just be not possible, because it requires planning around transport, around utilities, around quite a number of things, and around incentives and so forth. The minister, the strategy that the minister has to devise in section 6, it is required that the strategy be submitted to cabinet, and I think that the law provides that cabinet approves it. In terms of why is the Department of Labor not included in the advisory board, it's one of the issues we dealt with at the beginning of this presentation today, that there were actually quite a lot of government departments that we had saying was that it's government heavy, you are not always going to get all those government departments there. But what we've provided for, and one of the amendments that we've done, it's for the minister to enter into implementation accords with different government departments. Like one crucial department would be the Department of Environmental Affairs, you know, because a lot of investments get delayed because of environmental permits. So if one tried to have all the government departments, it would not be possible. But the legislation then would provide for the minister to enter into implementation contacts with different government departments and to report regularly on how, you know, progress was being made in terms of providing the one-stop-shop services. Obviously, the nature of and in terms of the labor regime that is going to provide in that is going to exist in the SEZ, I think it's something that we addressed previously, that we do not think that a lot of the public comments that we received were around relaxing labor requirements and I think we did address that previously, although we could talk about that if at all it's required. And obviously, it is a different advisory committee than the Consumer Commission. As we've indicated, it advises the minister on designation. It advises on the strategy and so forth. And I guess Parliament has an oversight role over the department, so the department would be reporting in any case on the progress of the SEZ as part of the annual reporting to Parliament. I think maybe I'll stop there, and maybe my colleagues could add if at all. I've left out anything.
Are there any colleagues who, any members of DTI who wish to add?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to add to the concerns of Honorable Albert, where he raises concerns about the public or business being applicants for the designation. I would like to state that it is the businesses or the public are allowed to, in terms of the Act, are allowed apply for the location on the SEZ to conduct their business.
So you are hoping not to add to the concerns but to allay the concerns. So let's see if that does allay the concerns. And that was, I think, Mr. Somdinga. Let me just make sure of the name here. My apologies. Somdinga, sorry. Sorry, thank you very much. Director, Legal Services. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the clarification on the process, DDG. So the Minister just designates at the very beginning, at designation stage. I think that's useful. A quick question. Once the Minister has designated a licensee, does that license then stand for other second or third SEZs as well? Because once an entity is a holder of a license, does that license. So, for example, if Gauteng provincial government wanted to apply to designate Oliver Tambo Airport as an SEZ, and then they get a license, and then a year later they want to do Lanseria, also as another SEZ, would the same license allow them to do that for the second SEZ as well? And if not, why not? Then the second question was about discrimination. DDG, I'm not saying that we must discriminate against anyone, and certainly not against independent spheres of government. I'm simply saying that the Constitution treats them differently. The Constitution says provincial governments and national government have got the power to legislate on issues of trade. And so provincial governments could pass their own SEZ, theoretically, I don't think they would, but provincial governments could theoretically pass their own SEZ legislation if they want. The Constitution says that they can. And all I'm saying is that the bill doesn't treat them with the same level of difference. The bill treats national government, provincial government, local government, state-owned companies, and public-private partnerships all the same. And I'm not sure that that's correct. I think there should be some differentiation in terms of application process.
Honourable Elm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your answers. The legal gentleman, I can't recall your surname. I would just like to make sure that I do understand your interpretation that you've given me, is that private business can actually, out of their own initiative, go to government and say they want to do something in terms of this act that will be beneficial and will be in accordance with the objects of the act, and then enter into a public-private partnership from there on, and then go to the minister for application. Is that my interpretation correct?
Right. Thank you, Honourable Albert. That almost...
Madam Chair, excuse me. I just had a second question,
exactly.
Which is something different. Now, in terms of labour law, I see that, I mean, obviously these nodes of development will be found in provinces. They might be cross-province, but they will be small areas. Have you spoken to the Minister of Labour whether in applying employment equity you will be using the national demographic or the local demographic in those areas? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. One of the points you seem to raise did seem to be on the with respect to private businesses, which my understanding would presuppose a triple P situation. But that was just precisely the point I wanted to raise around the IDZs, because it became apparent to us last year that not every IDZ was a triple P. Now, that being the case, you have already responded in the previous round of responses saying time would be given to IDZs to conform to the SEZ. Would that mean that they would be obliged then to become triple P's, every IDZ? So this is why I raised this issue right at the beginning, that they are different, the IDZs and the SEZs. And the issue then arises, would they be allowed to remain IDZs if they so wished and not become SEZs? And after the DTI has responded, I would appreciate if the advocate van der Merwe would take the opportunity to also address this issue of concurrency on the trade issues. Thank you. But let me turn to the DDG, Mr. Chip Fupa.
Thanks, Chair. It is quite possible that a province could hold more than one license. But for instance, if there would be a license pertaining to each designation, simply because a designation ensures that there has been a feasibility study that has been done, it is what is being proposed is viable, there is financing that has been obtained to do that. So a province could hold more than one license, but for each specific SEZ, the minister would have to designate afresh. I'm not sure, but my reading of the legislation is that maybe it's quite possible that the board that has been appointed, the entity board, that might be the more interesting issue, whether you'd have to form an entity each time. But I think the reading of the legislation is that each time you'd need to form an entity. So maybe that's something that you might want to look at around the entity, especially if at all the operator is different because of the nature of the SEZ. And then I know the question has been posed on the issue of the provinces. I guess maybe I leave that to understand and hear the views from advocate Fundamental as the chair has requested. Then on the issue that I know it's been addressed to my colleague, and I'm sure he'll respond to it. But my understanding is, yes, if at all a private sector entity sees an opportunity to establish an SEZ, it could approach government to form a PPP. And then the whole process would follow the PPP process. And because the PPP process is lengthy and it's also fair and transparent, we've made a provision towards the end to cut down on the number of steps in terms of issuing the operator permit. I don't think I understand the question on employment equity. The SEZ, as they are, we are providing for faster implementation, for cutting down on red tape, for providing incentives, for coordinating the provision of infrastructure, but the model that we've chosen is that we've not chosen an extraterritorial model, so whatever laws apply in South Africa would apply also inside an SEZ unless it's specifically provided in that particular law that it doesn't apply in the SEZ. So employment equity, all the other, our hope is that in terms of regulation, decisions would be made much more faster, it would be much more business friendly inside the SEZ. And then in terms of the issues that are raised by the chair, yes chair, we agree that not every IDZ is a PPP. But the legislation also allows that in certain instances you do not in all the cases require a PPP. The IDZ that we have are government owned, but they've established the government departments involved, which in our particular case would be the provincial government department of economic development in KZN and in Gauteng and in the Eastern Cape, they've all established different boards and they've established different entities to manage the SEZ. So it's those entities that we are going to provide with time to come into compliance with the Act. So they will all be converted to SEZ, but they will be given time for the departments and for the entities to make the necessary changes to ensure that they comply with the Act. The question was posed to your friend. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. So first of all, let's see DTI. Have you concluded?
Let's get that.
You want to come in at this point on the Sabasa.
Just one comment, Chairperson. On the issue of employment equity, I think that the objectives of the Employment Equity Act are very clear. And basically, they were meant to address the effects of the, what was it called in apartheid times, job reservation. And it is very clear what Jetop Reservation was at that point and why this act was brought in to address those effects. I think that as leaders, public representatives, we must be careful not to use, to abuse that piece of legislation in the manner that we have seen, for instance, in correctional services, and perpetuate or begin to again divide the society and imply that employment equity is again a replica of job reservation, because it is not. And I think we must take responsibility as members of this committee, and I'm speaking to the members of this committee. We must take responsibility and ensure that we don't play into the negative implications of what has been happening in recent months with regard to that piece of legislation. Our responsibility is to endeavor to unite our society on the time. I wanted to make that comment and caution, because it's not the first time this issue is raised in this particular committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kobasa. Honorable Elders, it looked very much like a Black Power salute, so I wasn't too sure.
And my hands are just lazy today, that's all. Madam Chair, I agree with Honorable Kobasa's contention, and that was my question. It's not whether employment equity is going to be applied, but how it's going to be applied, because government departments, to a certain degree, has a choice whether they will apply the national demographic in appointing people, or whether they're going to apply the provincial or some sort of regional demographic. And because this will be a regional initiative, surely the Minister of Trade and Industry must liaise in some way with the Minister of Labour to come to an understanding what demographic will be applicable in each and every instance. And that is very important, because as Mr. Honourable Kobasa has indicated, if you create something in a Northern Cape, and you tell most people who live there are from the coloured community, if you tell them no, you must follow the national demographic in that province. And it means you must bus in thousands and thousands of black workers into that province to meet the national demographic. That is absolutely ludicrous. Therefore, you must answer to this. You have an obligation constitutionally to answer to this. Thank you.
Let me allow DTI just to respond to that, but I'm sure members want to come in again on the specific issue as well. DTI, do you want to just conclude where you were with the Chief Director, as it were, Mr. Chifupa? Chief Director, won't you say your name for me, please?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Kaya Nanka.
That way they'll be able to spell it properly on the Hansard.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. Yeah, actually, mine was not on the employment equity, but I just wanted just to add clarity on the issue of the IDZs and SEZs. Actually, the department, when we took the decision to come up with this legislation on SEZ, in other words, we looked at the policy direction of the government in terms of the NGP and National Development Plan and industrial policy. And we felt the tool that is IDZ, yes, it is a very good tool in terms of industrialization, but it's much narrower in the family of the special economic zones. Hence, we broadened the scope and we said, let's bring more variants of the special economic zone. So the free ports,
sector development zones, industrial development zones, they are those different categories of a special economic zone. So in other words, they belong to the family of a special economic zone, all of them. So by introducing this legislation, once we have the SEZ Act, then the IGZ will be but one type of a special economic zone amongst the new types that will be designated by the Minister of Trade and Industry. I just wanted to provide that clarity, Chair. But I don't think it precludes an IGZ, let's say one IGZ, if it feels that in terms of, for instance, the provincial development and growth plans or IDPs, if they feel that they need to broaden their scope and change their form from being an IGZ to another type of an SEZ, I think there could be a process to allow that kind of a change as well.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. Now, we had a number of comments with respect to the Employment Equity Act and the application thereof. So, turning to yourself, DDG, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Chair. The bill as it stands does not foresee any changes to the Employment Equity Act or changes to how the Employment Equity Act is going to be applied. What we are seeking to do with the SEZ is to provide infrastructure primarily. Secondly, attract businesses. Thirdly, we attract businesses by providing infrastructure and cutting on red tape, and also by providing incentives. All the laws of the country would continue to be in place. I'm not sure, like there's been an example around the Northern Cape as to the application of the Employment Equity Act. This bill would not foresee changing the way in which the Employment Equity Act is applied in the Northern Cape. If there is anything, the bill does provide for the minister to enter into a compact with the Minister of Labour, and the compact would be around decision-making processes and around one-stop shops, so that if there are decisions that are required from entities that under the leadership of the Department of Labor, that would be around UIF, around CCMA issues, that within the zones, that these decisions can be made with minimum of red tape. But we do not foresee this bill changing the BES, changing the any of the different acts that impact, changing the Environmental Protection Act, you know, changing any of the acts that do regulate the conduct of business.
Thank you very much, DDG. Advocate van der Merwe, you will recall, members, I said just to clarify the issue on concurrency that's been raised by members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In respect of concurrency, members need to be mindful when we talk about that concurrency, we are talking about legislative capacity, the competency to legislate on a similar subject. So what we have here, and perhaps we should make the bill clearer, because when we look at the application in Clause 22, and that is where we've got national government, a provincial government, a municipality, public entity, municipal entity, PPP, may. When you look at that and you go to the next sub clause sub 2, the applicant must demonstrate how this SEZ will further government's industrial development objectives. It must achieve the provisions of section 4.2, which relates to, if we go to clause 4.2, the purpose of establishing SEZs include creation of an industrial complex with strategic economic advantage, developing infrastructure, attracting foreign domestic direct investment, and so on. Clause 22 sub 2b talks about being consistent with applicable national policies and laws. Now, I think, and that is maybe something that we can make a little bit clearer, what we have here is that your application here is for a special economic zone that is part of national objectives. In other words, the economic objectives that is being achieved is part of a bigger national, broader view. And that is why whoever applies will be treated with the same differentiation. There won't be any, I understand it's not discrimination, but it's almost an easier word to use to say special treatment to this one or that. Also, if regards had to this whole clause 22, there's a whole process that will be done before the minister would say yes or no, and that final decision of the minister to say yes or no is an administrative decision, and therefore subject to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. So I do think that there is sufficient justification, if I can call it that, to simply have this is the process, and any applicant will be treated in the same fashion. Madam Chair, if I can just ask your indulgence to just address the committee on three other aspects that have come up. In respect of the current IDZs and whether they will remain or can choose to remain IDZs, the committee must remember that the current IDZs have been designated and established in terms of an incentive program issued under the Manufacturing Development Act, I think 1993. That incentive program will have to be withdrawn in terms of that act. So once this bill is effective, that incentive program will, whatever that act requires, it might just die a silent death as well, you know, no longer continuing with it. So it is quite important that the transitional provisions here do provide for those IDZs. I think what we might have to do in that transitional clause is just to indicate the category in which these IDZs will fall, because I think that is something where maybe we don't have that fully there. Then the third aspect I would just like to comment on is your labour laws and employment equity. The DDG explained that, you know, the bill does not foresee changing any legislation, but there is a proposal for inclusion in the bill, the minister to enter into agreements with other departments. Now, he explained that that is more in line with your UIF, your one-stop-shop processes. But we must also keep in mind that if there is going to be something to change, the way labour law, customs, anything like that works in an IDZ, or an SEZ, it would be better for that change to be in the department that manages that in their legislation. So at the same time, when the minister enters into this compact with, let's call it now labour, that's now the topic currently, yes, that compact will deal with UIF, CCMA matters being done right on site. But the minister at that stage can also, and there the Intergovernmental Governance Framework Act allows for that, start asking, what can you do for SEZs? What can labour do? And then labour can do that in their own legislation. So what we currently have in this bill is simply a framework. It's very high level, setting up a framework. For this committee to, I think it's a very valid question to ask, what can other departments do? Because it's not just labour. There's a number of departments that can play a role. But those questions, I think, will come more when it comes to implementation and seeing the success of this. Then just lastly, there was a request for that structure to, schedule just to be amended a little bit. That can absolutely be done. We'll try and have that ready as soon as possible for members. It can even be distributed by email. And then maybe a timeline to show members the processes, how they will work, and the estimated time, maybe how long they take now, and what DTI envisage how long something will take. I think members have some experience in something, you know, this is how long it will take to do X, and members can say, no, I sat on this committee, it did not take that long. It took two times as long, or it was a lot shorter. So I think that would be good for members to be able to actually interrogate and see that implementation in a nice timeline.
No, thank you very much. I'm looking at members, and clearly, you know, there are quite a few complexities, notwithstanding that the bill only sought to do maybe a few things, but it has impacted on a number of other issues as well. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. I think the advocate makes a good point on concurrency, and I take her point, except that it still, to me, feels a little bit awkward that the minister can say to a provincial government which has legislative powers in relation to the same concurrent area, no, you can't have an SEZ, but you can always go and pass your own SEZ bill if you want to. It just seems like unnecessary to do that. It would be better to have a national SEZ framework and accommodate the powers and functions of provinces and national government departments in that framework. That would be preferable to me. Then, just a theoretical question on the issue of incentives. I mean, what we've got here is we've got an SEZ framework the success of which completely relies on the suite of incentives that government comes up with. But those are dealt with in two very brief paragraphs in the bill, in section 21. And we've heard here that in order for incentives to be developed, it's going to require legislative changes in a number of other departments. That's a very time-consuming, lengthy process that needs to be undertaken. Would it not be? We've just had the BEE bill before committee, which includes a trumping clause, which simply says any part of this legislation which contradicts another piece of legislation, this legislation trumps. This legislation takes precedence. So would it not be better to design a set of incentives, put it in this legislation, and simply say where this legislation conflicts with another piece of legislation, insofar as a special economic zone is concerned, only this legislation has precedence? That would, I think, probably save us, again, a number of years of legislative amendments, and it would save other committees a great deal of work in having to amend a whole range of legislation. And I think it might be something worth considering. I understand it's a lot of work, but this whole thing hinges on whether we can have proper incentives. Otherwise, there's nothing special about our special economic zones. So we've got to get the incentives right.
Thank you very much, Hill Lewis. I really think members need to go back to that 22B, the points that Advocate Van der Merwe has just pointed out to us now this morning, I think are very important. But also with respect to DTI, the issue around the IDZ itself and the incentive manufacturing incentives, etc. I know that over the years these have changed, and one would want to see that reviewed as well. The other issue is the memorandum here on the SEZ bill. Now, in particular, the point has been made about one-stop shops. And that's, the whole thing about the SEZ is that you're going to accelerate
this process. And when you look at the points you've made here on an extra six, page 16 of 20, you talk about the types of approvals required. There must be about 10 of them, quite a few of them. And then you talk about the stakeholders that will be necessary for this successful implementation, and that is 16 of them. And then what is very helpful, of course, and constructive under 38 on page 17, you categorize this into perhaps five broad functions. Now, what you do say in 39 is that the DTI is in the process, is still in this process, of reviewing various one-stop shop models. See, it's still in this process. Now, I'm not sure when that process will be, when you're expecting to conclude the process itself. And as you have looked at this, and as we are aware of all of them, the sort of one-door shop that most of us know, the online approval system, and the approval system at CIPCO, we've had lots of problems with challenges. So I don't know if you've even discussed this with CIPCO. Because, you know, I don't want to legislation coming out of this committee with one-stop approval using online that's going to create just as many challenges when we are overcoming, of course, quite effectively so far, CIPCO. But I think if you're going to expedite the SEZ issue, it's taken 2 years for CIPCO to begin to get there. We can't have a repeat performance. Then you talk about a one-window shop. And is it one-window shop? Yeah, well, I don't know, you know, windows, etc. There are windows and windows of windows, everything from IT to window shopping, etc. But the point under four, integrated registration function. The very term here sounds quite, you know, really quite constructive, to have the thing integrated, as it were. Because I just can't see you cutting down on time when you have to visit 16 people. Just sending around a magazine to be ticked off by 16 people in one department can take a month. So, you see, I think these are the practical considerations of the one-stop shop. I think the policy, I don't have a problem with, I think that is the way we have got to go. But I really would like to see you begin to spell this out to us, this one-stop shop, so we can look at these different models you're putting forward, because the one-stop shop, as I see it, will be quite critical to the success of this SEZ issue. I mean, I'm looking at the visa one. It could be held up there for 2 years. So I just think you've got to look at this. So I would like you that, you know, we actually took a decision, the MANCO, which consists of some of the key members on WIP, who's just medically away this morning, Honourable Kwabasa and myself, looking at this issue, and said, you know, if we need to give the DTI time with this to unpack it a bit. It's a very, very important piece of legislation which has got to work. It has got to work. That's the first thing. I think that we want to be quite certain. Certainly from what you said, Advocate van der Merwe, the concurrency issue, and even what the DA seem to be concurring with themselves, doesn't seem to be a critical problem in the legislation itself. But I want the DTI also to look at those aspects. I want them to look at the one-stop shop. And I really think this flow, there does, I have to be honest, DTI, the points you've made in this new presentation, PowerPoint, does spell it out more clearly, these different roles. There is a greater clarification here. But it is not that clear.
And what we are going to do, the next time you come back to us with this, I've asked the secretary here, committee secretary, to invite the people who raise some of these issues, you see, so that they're also sitting here at the time that the committee deliberates on the matter. Okay. The other issue is with the DTI, not DTI, the NT. Quite clearly, the stakeholders, you know, one can imagine that, you know, one of them that you mentioned here is a critical stakeholder, I'm just not sure where, but there were a whole lot of them, was the National Intelligence Agency. One doesn't imagine that that would be involved to the same degree as your income tax, you know, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, you know, in some, you'd have a regular and much bigger role being played, and depending on the issue, we had a council here, I think the Chris Harney Council, which was even putting forward the concept of bringing in agro-processing, and we all know about the farm labourers and the workers and the legislation with respect to the wages there and so on. It would depend how much each department would be involved. And I would like you to be able to come back with a clear presentation on this one-stop shop issue, on the other issues we have raised in this regard, especially with the roles and functions. I don't want to see is that the integrated governmental framework, as it were, in any way, you know, impacted upon in the kind of manner that would lead to unintended outcomes, etc. Because that is not the intention here. And I do want all of these areas explored so that we do produce a max, you know, a really robust piece of legislation. But I must say there's been, for me, a real improvement. I'm looking at members, as I say this, from our first presentation on this piece of legislation, but that we do need to get a further input in this regard. So, members, would you agree with me that we give them until the 11th of June? I'm looking at all members in this regard. Yeah. There is an agreement, and then we will have others present at the same time, some of the submissions, those folks who made submissions at the same time to us in this regard. But,
Chairperson?
Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Would that also include the presentations that the Advocate Fundamental was talking about, the timelines and all of that?
In fact, what we're asking for, and I think Advocate van der Merwe did indicate that she could do this, we don't want you bringing it in on the day we're going to start. You see, that's a problem to us. I only saw some of this today. We would like this available on Friday. Is that Thursday late afternoon, so that Friday members have got it electronically? Hello, members? That agree. We don't want anything coming in on Monday morning. Nothing. Unless you want to come in. Right. On that note, I see here, members, you know, it's 10 to 12. I could, of course, as chair, say, what about a few minutes? But in the stricter sense of procedure, that wasn't passed on the agenda. So, we'll conclude the agenda much earlier than planned. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, just on an unrelated matter, you'll recall a couple of weeks ago, at least a month ago, I'm not sure, but at least a month ago, I raised the issue of us not having received feedback from the people that promised our committee feedback in way back in the public hearings on the triple B double E bill. And at the time, the Secretary and Ms. Naidu said that they would do some follow-up, but I still haven't received the feedback from the two presenters who you specifically asked, Chair, to please send us feedback. I think at the time it was within 10 days or 2 weeks. Now, I'm not sure what to do in this regard because I really think that feedback is crucial, and it's not possible that they can just ignore your request like that.
I hear what you say. I'm just trying to think of the second one. The one was the Black Business Council. And the second one?
Chair, I have to go back and check my notes. I was under the impression it was two, but it was definitely the Black Business Council, and I'm almost certain there was one other, but I'll go and check.
Right. I think Ms. Naidu, who's a parliamentary liaison officer, you will recall that yourself at the time. Now, you see, it becomes important because we are going to take the legislation itself to the House of, if I'm not mistaken, it's the 20th. of June, and really it would be unfair for members to get it the morning, so I will ask for Mr. Hermans to liaise with you on that one, so that we have all the, you know, commitments that we have requested. They may even have arrived. Have you sent, you know, have they arrived, Ms. Naidu, and you've sent them to us? Because you wouldn't be dealing with the Black Business Council at all. Yeah. So, but was it something else that had come up, you see, from DTI? Because really, in my notes here, I don't see anything from the department outstanding itself, I must be frank. And you see, Ms. Naidu is the parliamentary liaison officer for DTI, not anyone else, we all hope, yeah. But of course she's not, since DTI. All right, is there anything else, members? I just have, as announcements here, a couple of pointers. We've got a very tight program, and everyone would acknowledge that. We've had regular requests from horse racing and the like to come before the committee. And it really isn't possible until after July. And I want to make that quite clear. It just isn't possible. The one outstanding issue that has come to our attention has been from the grooms, and we are dealing with that through Manco. We've sent it along to the National Gambling Board, and the National Gambling Board have responded. And I know that, you know, Mr. Hermans and myself, among others, pointed out that the issues that they had raised here, the grooms, which they raised with the committee, you know, originally, when we were going through this, that the issue appears to be related to labour, and that it also needs to go through there. So when we've got all that together, it'll come back to the committee itself. I hope members are quite aware of that one. And the only other thing is the NCR, which is an issue that we said that we would continue to keep right on the radar screen, and that if anything serious, you know, begins to peak, that we may need to look at it again briefly, even during one of our other scheduled meetings. And there have been a number of issues that have been coming up in terms of the media, but also in releases that the NCR itself has been making in this regard. So there may be a need for us just to do a slight revisit there. And finally, where am I going? Not on holiday. I am going to the National Global Summit, or the Global, I think of everything being national, but the Global Summit of Women, which will be tackling a number of issues, including, of course, employment and what one would call equitable employment, the value of women to the economy, and good governance. But thank you very much. And I leave you in the good hands of our whip, the Honourable Khadebi, and the Manco, and of course yourselves. Thank you very much.
By the way, members are a little concerned. I mean, it's not true.